Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Chronology episode. And for those not familiar, that's how this podcast got started. It is a chronological look at the artifact corner of the Top Cow universe. So I talked about this, reminded everybody of how it all got started on the last episode. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that. I'll give you a quick reminder here. I always wanted to read the artifact corner of the Top Cow universe, but never had. And when I finally got my hands on a giant Witchblade omnibus, I knew it wasn't as simple as just reading Witchblade, even though that was the first title that Top Cow published in this corner of their universe. So I did a quick search online. I came across a reading chronology on the Comic Vine website put together by a user named Condor. So our thanks to him for doing all the legwork. And what this reading order is, it's a historical chronology. So that means the earliest books in the chronology that you read are the ones that are furthest back. In ancient Egypt, in ancient Greece, former bearers of the Witchblade, moving on up through to modern times. So currently in the universe, we are reading Arcanum, which is a series by Brandon Peterson. He both writes it and does the artwork, and it fits in here. It basically, we know that this series takes place real soon after Sarah Pazzini gets the Witchblade. So we've covered 12 issues, the first 12 issues of Witchblade, plus a bunch of tales of Witchblade, a few other things along the way that are, you know, all happened before. So we're really starting to get into the beginnings of Sarah discovering what the Witchblade is, and that sort of thing, and going to start on Darkness soon, and eventually we'll cover it all. But I've talked in the past about how to get your hands on these books. Some of the, when it comes to Witchblade, Darkness, the classic stuff, it's available digitally on Comixology or digitally from the Top Cow website. You can pick up trades of a lot of the stuff, but some of the more obscure stuff can be hard to find. Like this Arcanum stuff, I don't know that it's ever been reprinted. I'm sure you can find it on eBay relatively cheaply. There may be digital copies out there when Top Cow does things like Humble Bundles and that kind of thing. But I can't imagine that. I mean, I had never heard of this series before covering the Top Cow chronology. So I'm sure if you can find it in a shop and back issues, it's not going to be very expensive. There's not a big demand for it. Same thing if you came across it at a show or if you're looking on eBay. So let me go ahead and give a rundown on the creators, and then we'll dive into issue 4 of Arcanum. So as I said, it's written and drawn by Brandon Peterson. Inks in this issue are by Joe Weems. Colors by Richard Eisenov. Letters by Dennis Heisler. We have Marco Madman Gali with ink assist. Robin Spihart on lettering assist. So we saw at the end of issue 3 that the four good avatars had used the portal in the Thurgist building or base or what have you in Greenwich Village in New York to transport themselves to Atlantis, which is where Franklin Blake, leader of the evil avatars, as it were, is there with the Thurgist and have captured Ming Chang and are the newest avatar of life. And they're trying to convert Ming to their side of things. So as it stands right now, there's 4 and 4. We've got 4 good avatars and 4 bad ones. The good avatars are led by Ramat Nasir. There's also Georgi Milovich. We've got Luis Benitez and Marie Eisenov. They don't really have code names or anything like that, because they're just regular people who then have this magic manifest, and they have different skills. Georgi has cold powers. Seems like Marie Eisenov is just more of a fighter. She's got a sword. She looks very Amazonian or very like a Valkyrie of some sort. Luis Benitez can basically turn himself into the thing, sort of, maybe a bigger version of the thing. He can pulling metal and rock from his surrounding environment and creating like this rock shield that he fights in. And Ramat, it seems like his powers are either light based or energy based, where he can fire beams of light, lasers, energy blasts, that sort of thing. On the evil side of things, we have Franklin Blake. As I said, he's kind of the leader of the bad avatars, as it will, and he's an avatar of shadow or darkness, and we haven't seen too much of what he can do, although we know he can kind of reach into people's minds and take their kind of their fears and traumas, if you will, and bring them to life in terms of giving people visions, like shadows that are kind of replaying their darkest times or their things that they're afraid of. We also know one of the avatars that he's associated with is Bossen Rao. And again, at this point, we haven't seen him fight, but we've heard him mention creating a disco inferno. We saw in him mention something to that effect in issue 2. So we know his powers are heat or flame based. There's also Sonya Carlson, who at this point, we don't really know what her powers are. But she's dressed pretty skimpily and doesn't look too powerful. She doesn't have a weapon. So curious to see what her powers are. And then the final one is Takeo Saito, I think is, Sato Yoritomo is his name. And he's a like, big guy, top knot, Asian, very Asian influenced, green armor. He's wielding a double-edged battle axe, and he just looks big and menacing. So you figure, he's got the axe, he's a good fighter, like super strong, probably invulnerable, very much in the vein of like a Hulk or something like that. So again, we saw at the end of last issue that the good avatars had fought their way into the basement and used the transporter there to teleport themselves to Atlantis to try to rescue Ming Chang. And as they emerge, the four avatars that are on the evil side of things are there waiting for him. And Benita says, "Hey, Ramat, I thought you said this was going to be a surprise attack." And Georgie says, "Yeah, it is a surprise, Benita. They surprised us. It's a trap, just like I said it would be." Plus, Luis's plan to get them there secretly, quietly, didn't really go too well. So immediately the different sides kind of pick their foes and start to battle. Meanwhile, Ming Chang is looking on, trying to figure out what's going on. And as she's looking at these avatars about to fight, she's grabbed from behind on the shoulder, and it's Hawk, who worked for Blake. He's sort of a bounty hunter, if you will, assassin, gun for hire. And in the first issue, he was sent out to kill Ming Chang before she fully came into her powers, before she could become immortal. And Hawk failed in that mission, and Blake wasn't too happy with him. So Ming Chang is kind of surprised to see him there. And she's like, "Well, what are you doing here?" And he says, "Well, stand down. I'm not here to fight. I'm not for either side. And you shouldn't either, because you should fight the battles that your heart tells you to fight, not what other people tell you to do. And I've done some sniffing around. I've been around the block. I'm a pretty good, I've seen things. I'm a pretty good judge of what's going on. And from everything that I see of what's going on, all this chaos, all this fighting, it has the stink of Matthew Royal all over it. So let me show you where the real battle is going to take place, away from this fight." And as the scene shifts back to what avatars are fighting what, we see that Sato Yoritomo, the big bruiser, is fighting against Marie Eisenhower. And he manages to subdue her pretty easily. I mean, they're just trading blows, as it were. But basically, his bigger size and due to that size, greater strength allows him to knock her out. So she's defeated pretty quickly. Meanwhile, we find out that Sonya Carlson, the evil avatar with the skimpy outfit, like I mentioned, her powers apparently are emotionally based, and she can apparently make people fall in love with her really easily. So as Luis Benitez in his giant rock armor is going over to try to help Marie in her fight, Sonia Carlson's like, hang on a second. What are you doing? Why don't you take off that heavy suit and get more comfortable? And Benitez immediately is like, okay, I love you. How about this? How does this look? And, you know, even though she's not physically big or doesn't appear to be very powerful, you know, Benitez is right there, just, you know, regular Joe Schmo without his rock armor. So Sonia Carlson is able to knock him out with one punch. Meanwhile, we see Georgie and Hussein Rao fighting, and this is basically cold against hot, right? But we're on Rao's home turf here, right? I mean, it's part of the reason that Georgie didn't want to go in the first place. They're fighting them. You know, they've got the home field advantage at their stronghold. And sure enough, Hussein leads him to a part of the ruins where the ground is basically a bunch of bronze. And once Georgie is standing on that, Hussein like melts the ground underneath, underneath Georgie. And he tries to use his powers to harden it. But what happens is he basically hardens the bronze that Hussein had just melted and like creates a cocoon for him. He's basically like he's been dipped in bronze, and then the bronze has hardened. And Hussein ends up winning. So the evil avatars all win their fights pretty easily. They each take about a page. It's good art, though. It's fun. It's action-packed. Good layouts, good use of camera angles. And the final fight, of course, is Nasir and Blake. So we find out through the exposition here as they're talking that they're actually half-brothers. Apparently, Nasir is a bastard. Franklin Blake's father was visiting Egypt, apparently, and took a mistress. And so they're half brothers, and Blake sort of resents that. And again, we get a lot of dialogue here, a lot of exposition, just to kind of flesh out the background and why these two dislike each other so much. And some of it is from Blake himself, a little bit from Nasir, and then some from Hawk as well. So for whatever reason, a lot of it may be because Nasir can't necessarily bring himself to harm his brother. We see that Blake has the upper hand at the beginning. And meanwhile, we see that this is where Hawk has brought Ming Chang. Like, the other battles don't matter. This is the battle that really matters. And Ming says, oh, it's Blake and Ramon. And Hawk replies, yeah, I told you this is where the real battle would be, brother versus brother for the fate of the world. And Ming's like, wait, brothers? And Hawk says, yeah, it's you know, different mothers on different sides of the world, same father. One was an Egyptian mistress, the other the, you know, prototypical wife. And, you know, Blake had everything the world could offer. He had wealth, he had privilege, you know, luxury, but his soul is twisted by that ability to have anything. He never had to work for anything. So his soul has turned dark, and he's twisted by fear, the fear of losing things because he's had so much. Whereas Ramat never had anything. He was he scorned, he was outcast. Anything that he got, he had to struggle for. And the whole reason that he fights for the world and not for himself is because he doesn't want anyone to ever have to live the kind of life that he lived and the things that he had to go through. So when you think of it like that, it really is light versus dark. With Matthew Royal looking on, and Hawk says, even though this is a battle of light versus dark, that man, Matthew Royal, he's going to pervert even that. And as Blake is about to deliver the killing blow, Ramat says, Blake, it's time you saw the light. And he launches, Ramat launches his power into the air. He says, it's over. I won't let your darkness poison me. So basically what he's saying is, even though I could use my power and defeat you, you are trying to turn me away from what I believe, which would be an even bigger loss than if I allow you to defeat me. So he's taking the higher road. You know, he's been baited, he's been goaded, and from Blake's perspective, it's almost like, even if he loses, even if Ramat uses his powers to defeat Blake, Blake still wins, because then Ramat has given in, right? It's kind of like Star Wars, like Return of the Jedi, right? Like, you can't win. If you fight, you can't win, because if you fight and you give in to anger, you lose. If you fight and the bad guys defeat you, you lose. The only way to win is not to fight, even if it means sacrificing yourself. And so that's what Ramat decides to do here. And he fires his, you know, he's got all this power built up in him that he could use to fire at Franklin and perhaps defeat him. But instead he fires it up into the air. He says, it's over. I won't let your darkness poison me. But Matthew Royal is there, and this is what he's been waiting for. And he says, finally. And he uses a spell to deflect all that Avatar energy that's been shot up in the air. He deflects all that Avatar energy that Nassar unleashed back to Blake. And Nassar yells out, Franklin, no! But it's too late. He's dead. And Ming Chang says, Royal deflected the bolt back. He killed Blake. And she's wondering why. And Hawk says, well, I'm afraid I know the answer to that. The answers are forming up now. And we see the Baron show up. The Baron being sort of a neutral figure who's even more powerful than the Avatars. He is the one that is in charge of the Asylums, which is sort of neutral ground, this network of nightclubs that actually connect to this alternate dimension where Avatars can go. And as I said, it's neutral ground, and everybody is, you can't be attacked there, and it's just kind of a safe haven. And Baron is the one that comes when an Avatar dies, and he collects that energy and then passes it on to whoever the next Avatar is going to be. So Baron is here. He says, I've come for Blake to take his magic. And Nassar is trying to prevent that. He's saying, no, I never wanted this. Because again, only an Avatar can kill an Avatar. They can't be killed by anybody else. If they're killed in any other normal way, they reincarnate, or they reconstitute themselves, they heal, they can't be killed. Only an Avatar can kill an Avatar. So here, because of Royal's treachery, Nassar has killed his own half-brother, and Nassar is trying to prevent Baron from taking the power. And Blake has finally seen the light, no pun intended, but he's like, you weren't lying about Royal, were you? It's true. Why didn't I believe you? Perhaps it was all true, like everything you told me, the philosophy that you had, that we should use our powers for the greater good of everybody instead of just ourselves. At the final moment of his passing, Franklin Blake realizes, hey, maybe he was wrong about everything. And we see him dissipate as Nasir is holding him in his hands. Blake dissipates into energy. And that energy heads toward Baron, as it should, as it always does, so that Baron can, pass it along to the next Avatar. But as it's about to enter Baron, it's diverted. And Baron says, his energy, what sorcery is this? And Matthew Royal is standing there saying, that would be mine, Baron, my sorcery, 800 years in the making. And he has absorbed all the energy, all the Avatar energy from Franklin Blake has gone into Matthew Royal. And Baron says, "What, Royal, what have you done, magician?" And then we get a giant, giant information dump from Matthew Royal. It takes up, I mean, I don't even know how many word balloons on this page, but he basically says he stole Blake's avatar energy. All the tattoos that he gave Blake and all his followers were more than simple communicators. They were a way to draw the avatar energy into me when they die. And so even though this has happened over thousands and thousands of years, many, many times where Baron takes that energy and then passes along to someone else, that ritual has been broken. And Baron wants to know why. And Royal's like, "Well, I'm a mage and I want power. And this is the way that we gain power." You know, for so long, mages gained power, but they were mortal. And so ultimately they died, and you can't maintain your power when you're dead. So what we've always needed was an ability to live indefinitely. And I learned a long time ago what the avatars were and that their magic made them immortal. And so I managed to get a hold of the Sword of Set, which is the sword Ming Chang saw last issue that she was talking about and was warned about with a disembodied head. He said, with that Sword of Set and with the spell to capture this avatar's power, and now with the power of the Avatar of Darkness and Nasir's group laying defeated and spent, I have everything I need. And soon the other parts of my plan are going to bring about the end of the world, and there will then be a new age. And I don't mind telling you my plans, because there's nothing anyone can do about it now. Not even you, Baron. You may be death incarnate, but you can't take an avatar's life. You believe in your duty. You believe in this war. But I've fought in enough wars to know that only fools believe. And Baron's had enough. Like, he hears this speech and he says, "You fool? You want to call me a fool? You are the fool." And he stabs Matthew Royal. Again, he's supposed to be neutral. Baron is supposed to be neutral. He's not supposed to attack. He's not supposed to choose sides. But Baron has had it. And he stabs him. And Royal's shocked, saying, you can't do this. And we get the chant that started the whole series. Three who are one since the world began. Three who saw the slaying of man. Three who saw their holy judge slay. Three who are one say the slayer must pay. And Baron whispers, "No, mistress, no, my energy, death, the energy of death itself." He says, "It's out of control. I can't contain it," because he's broken the rule. He's betrayed his objectivity. And so the power of death incarnate, which is within Baron, is being released. And everybody there feels it. They all start to die, from Nasir to Ming Chang to the fish in the water. And even in New York City, we get one panel with Sarah Pazzini, the Witchblade, saying, "No, death is coming. I must protect." So she even feels it, even in New York, thousands of miles away. And as Nasir feels death coming on, he calls out to Ming. He says, you have to save us. You have to save me before it's too late." And Ming says, "Save you? Damn you all. Why should I save you? What have you done for me except bring me into this war I didn't want, I didn't want to be a part of, knew nothing about?" So she decides, "You know what? I'll save somebody." And who she decides to save is Matthew Royal. And upon his resurrection, as it were, from the Avatar of Life, Baron's powers return as well. He says, "Well, my power, it's mine again." Well, it is, because Baron has no longer betrayed his neutrality, right? He killed Matthew Royal, but Royal's not dead anymore. So his mistake, if you will, has sort of been erased. And with that power, that power of death incarnate back inside of Baron, contained within him again, then everybody else is saved as well, because the power of death is not out there. It's now contained in Baron. And Nasir is shocked. He says, Ming, why would you save Royal? You're siding with him? And Royal's like, of course she is. You idiot. Now kill him, Ming. And Ming's like, you know what? All of you need to shut up and listen, because I've finally wrapped my head around this. You and the stupid war said, take a side, take this side, come to the side and we'll win, come to the side and we'll win. She says, it's all crap. It's a stupid fight. And neither side really cares about anything but winning. Like, it's so juvenile, right? You've been given these powers. You can do like really incredible things. And instead, you just fight with them. Like, don't you realize the stakes? This little fight has consequences for everybody across the entire world. And all you care about is beating each other up. This isn't a playground fight. And I'm not picking a side at all. I'm not going to play. I've seen both your sides, and they're both crap. You know, light, dark, good, evil. Who cares? It's all just people dying. And they'll just keep on dying. And Baron will collect the power and give it to somebody else. And the war continues, and it's just dying. So I brought Royal back because now the scales are level. It's four against four, right? So I didn't do that for good or evil. I did it to restore the balance. And the act, the mistake that Baron made has been canceled out. Because Baron, for all your power and all your talk of being above the avatars, you fell for the same fight they did. If you want to actually be neutral, then be neutral with me. Don't just pretend to be neutral. Because why should Baron care if it's Blake with the power as Avatar of Darkness or Matthew Royal? It's still 4-on-4. It's still the balance. Baron fell for the same thing. Ming's right. Baron made the same mistake. He got wronged, you know, perceived to be wronged. And so he kills Blake, or he kills Royal, rather. Royal goads him into it. I mean, how did, other than the fact that Royal wasn't ever destined to have the power of an avatar, it's not really that different from what Baron's going to do anyway. He's going to take the power that used to be in Blake and give it to somebody else who's, you know, predetermined. All Royal did was cut out the middleman, take the power for himself. I'm not saying it's right what he did. But what I'm saying is you can see where Ming is coming from when she tells Baron, hey, you fell for the same act. It's but now it's balanced again. And so that's it. That's the end of kind of the first part of the story, because as we turn the page, we actually see that Ming Chang we see her on an upper floor, second to third floor of one of those asylum buildings, one of those nightclubs, looking out through the window at Ramat Nasir and the rest of the good avatars. And she's going to live there now. She's going to live in the asylum because she truly is neutral, just like the Baron. She didn't choose a side. And we see the other avatars of the good down there on the ground looking up with Nasir saying, goodbye, Ming. We really could have used you now more than ever. And Marie Eisenhower's wondering, so, okay, Ramat, what do we do now? Baron got us out of Atlantis, but we still don't have a home. We don't have a base. We don't have a plan. And Ramat, you know, he grew up homeless. He's not worried about that. He says there's worse things than being homeless. And I know my half-brother could never understand that because he always had everything. And when you have things, the worst thing that you think about is losing those things. But when you have nothing except your faith, then you don't really have anything to lose. And what we do, we're doing for the world. So, you know, Royal, he isn't my brother. He doesn't come from a place of misunderstanding or fear, because we know that that's sort of the evil, if you will, or where the evil came from, the motivation that Franklin Blake had. It all came down to being a person of privilege, growing up with a silver spoon, and always being afraid of losing it, of having that being taken away. Royal's different. You know, he's this wizard. He's been around for 800 years. He now is immortal. He has the power of the Avatar, and he's cold, and he's calculating, and he's patient, and he's dangerous. And Ming was right. Up till now, this is Nasir speaking now. He says, Ming was right. We've been playing up until now, but it just turned serious. We lost this battle, but we got to win the war. Because it's not just, you know, Blake in that sort of juvenile first, second grade mentality where this is mine and you can't take it away. And I'm going to sort of beat everybody up so that what is mine remains mine. What Royal has planned, and we don't necessarily know what that is. We know he has more plans because he mentioned Baron. This is the first part. Getting the power of an Avatar is the first part. And now I can set the rest of my plans in motion. Those plans are going to be much more deadly, much more dangerous than anything that that Blake may have had in mind. So that's where this issue 4 ends. So good issue. This has probably been my favorite issue of the series so far. I feel like it's starting to get some momentum. We're starting to understand. I love that Ming called out both sides on their crap. You know, she's like, I just got these powers. I'm the Avatar of life. And I don't want to have anything to do with either one of you. You're both juvenile. You're both stupid. You're both coming at it from a sense of making decisions out of emotion and not thinking about the greater good. You know, you have so much power. All these avatars have more power than any man or woman should ever have. And when we fight, there are consequences. People can die. You know, there can be collateral damage, and all you care about is winning. You know, for all of Ramat's talk about wanting to make sure nobody grows up the way he grows up or lives life the way he did, he wants the world to be a more fair or just place. He hasn't done anything to change it yet. It's just been, hey, we've got to stay alive or we've got to defeat the other avatars. And now with Royal having the power that Blake formerly had, they're even more backed into a corner. You know, they sort of have to use their powers to stop Royal as opposed to, hey, maybe I can do something else with my powers to make the world a better place. They've been on the defensive the whole time. And with Ramat saying, hey, things just turned deadly serious. Maybe we'll finally see the avatars of good. Kind of go on the offensive and try to, you know, figure out what Royal is doing and get ahead of him instead of always being reactionary. So like I said, this is my favorite one, favorite issue of the series so far. Really feel like we've got some momentum going. Still, my biggest complaint is the big information dumps, the just so much dialogue. It's a very dialogue heavy book. And I don't know if that's just lack of experience from Brandon Peterson or that's the way that he wanted it. But it's sort of strange because, like, I think I mentioned this on the last episode where this era of comics, we started to move away from the heavy dialogue. But this is sort of a throwback to the old school. So at least you're getting a lot of reading time for your comic dollar, a lot of value. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. I want to thank everybody for joining me as always and talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.